Mayor Tejada and Dennis Prager. And I think you'll find that the issue, one that will be stimulating. I think you'll find the controversy is going to be there because Dennis Prager is a man who disagrees with Rabbi Mayor Tejada. That's why they're here. First, a hello to Rabbi Mayor Tejada. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Boy, you're a busy man. I've seen you in several different television shows and heard you on radio. I understand 60 Minutes is following you around. That means they're going to do a thing on you, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Are you worried that it's going to be a hatchet job?
I'm not worried, but it will be a hatchet job.
Oh, it will be. Yeah. You know that up front, huh?
Sure.
I see.
Sure.
I was amazed here a few weeks ago on August 5th to read on the front page of the New York Times a story by Thomas L. Friedman, filed from Jerusalem, that... things have changed in Israel. Let me read the first
part.
Mayor Tejada was elected to the Israeli parliament a year ago. Most political commentators here dismissed him as an American import and a racist lunatic who would never find a serious following in the Israeli society. His election, they said, was a fluke. Today, nobody is dismissing Rabbi Tejada, who advocates ousting all Arabs from Israel and the occupied territories and turning the country into a purely Jewish state that would be run according to Jewish law. He's the most talked about political figure in Israel, and by all indications, his popularity is soaring.
It's quite true. I really couldn't have said better myself.
Well, why? I've got to ask you that. Why would your brand of politics, which is just short of being... to the right of Genghis Khan and Attila the Hun, why would your brand of politics in Israel that always has had such compassion for people invited the Arabs to come and stay in Israel when it was formed? Why would your brand of politics, where you want to kick them all out and you don't care what happens to them just so they leave Israel and the occupied territories, why would your brand of politics gain popularity in Israel?
Because the people of Israel, and especially the Sephardic Jews of Israel, the Jews who came from Arab countries, didn't learn about Arabs in seminars on the West Coast or the East Coast. They lived with Arabs. They come from Arab countries. They know what it means to have lived under Arabs, and they never again want to. There was a funeral yesterday of a Jew who was murdered. He's the fourth Jew murdered in a month. The people of Israel, the ordinary people, are frightened. They're troubled. They understand that there is a very, very serious problem. The problem is that the Arabs who live inside Israel hate Israel. They understand that Israel is a Jewish state and that the Arabs are not Jewish. And they understand that the Arabs, if they could, would do to the Jews what they do to themselves every day in Beirut. They don't want that to happen. They're not troubled by the niceties of Western democracy. They didn't come to Israel to die. They came there to live. And therefore, when Mayor Tejada gets up and he says, we have a problem. The problem is, will we sit by quietly and in 20 years, through peaceful means, through coexistence, through democracy, through equality, will we allow the Arabs here to be a majority and vote the state of Israel out of existence, and in the meantime, have women and children and men murdered every single week? They say no. So I have an answer. No one else has an answer. That's why they vote for me.
Your answer, is that the, you'll pardon the expression, the final solution?
I don't care what you call it. I really couldn't care less. You're not of any interest to me. I don't hate Arabs. I love Jews. And I intend to save the Jewish people, both from Arabs and from themselves.
Where does your policy differ, other than, doing away with them in a concerted campaign, from what Hitler did to the Jews?
That is, if you really mean that question, if you don't mean to ask it as a provocative question, but if you really mean it, I'm astounded. The Jews of Germany never, ever said, this country is really ours. The Germans stole it from us. And when we become the majority, we'll take it back and call it Israel. The German Jews wanted nothing more than to be the best Germans that ever lived. The Arabs don't want to be Jews or Israelis. The Arabs say, the Jews stole this country from us. We were the majority once. We want this country back. When we have it back, it'll be Palestine. And if anyone in this room thinks that there's one Arab in Israel who would rather live in a country which is legally defined as the Jewish state, he has greater contempt for the Arabs than I thought that even liberals could have.
How do you square Israeli society and democracy? Do you want to do away with what is known as the only democracy in that part of the world?
Well, first of all, anyone who has a modicum of intelligence knows that a basic contradiction between Zionism and Western democracy. Zionism came into being to create a Jewish state. Theodor Herzl, the founder of Political Zionism, wrote a book which is called The Jewish State. A Jewish state at the very minimum. The minimal definition means a state with a majority of Jews, because only in that way can Jews solve their own destiny, be masters of their own fate. Western democracy postulates the basic axiom that it doesn't matter who is the majority. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish or non-Jewish. Whoever's the majority is it. Therefore, there is a basic contradiction. Since most Jews, this is most Western Jews, are basically schizophrenics, with one foot inside Judaism and the other half inside Western culture, and they would like to believe that Judaism is Thomas Jefferson. It isn't. It isn't. Judaism and Zionism call for a Jewish state. It doesn't square with Western democracy. That's not pleasant. It's too bad I haven't come here, or I wasn't put on this earth, and I don't think that anyone was put on this earth to make people happy. I think that most people were put on this earth, hopefully, to make people think.
Well, you certainly do make people think, and they make them call on telephones, and we're going to take a few calls here in a few minutes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Dennis Prager. So stay with us. My two guests, Rabbi Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager. I'm Ray Brain. Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager. Now, a little bit about Dennis Prager. He's written two books, The Nine Questions People Ask About Judaism, published by Simon & Schuster, and Why the Jews, The Reasons for Anti-Semitism, also a Simon & Schuster paperback. He has a daily program and also a Sunday program in Los Angeles. It's called Religion on the Line. He was a fellow of the School of International Affairs and the Russian and Middle East Institutes of Columbia University. From 1976 to 1983, he was director of the Brandeis-Barden Institute in California. And he lectures all across the country. In fact, Dennis just came in from North Carolina. Dennis, glad to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Ray.
Dennis, you deal with this on a program called Religion on the Line. You are Jewish. How do you feel about Rabbi Meir Kahana?
Well, the reason that I agreed to appear this evening, because this is not the normal sort of thing, I don't like to engage in polemics and debates as a rule, but I'd like to defend Judaism from the smear campaign that Meir Kahana has perpetrated against it. And I really feel as the defender this evening of Judaism against some of the things that he said. It's remarkable, had an Arab member of the PLO sat here and said that Zionism and democracy are mutually contradictory ideas, he would have been called an anti-Semite. In fact, a lot of the things that Meir Kahana says would render him anti-Semitic. He is an echo, tragically, a tragic echo, produced to a large extent by the Holocaust and by the Arab desire to destroy Israel. He is a classic product of Jews being hated for all these centuries, and he has incorporated a mirror image of the non-Jew in his psyche. And that is really what we're dealing with. He hates non-Jews as he feels non-Jews hate him. And his answer to Arafat is to be the Jewish Arafat. It's very interesting, Ray. You asked him, and he dismissed it as a lunacy. You asked him what really differentiates Meir Kahana's attitude to Arabs from Hitler's to German Jews. And he didn't answer you, because the fact is, as I see, the difference is minimal. What he did say was that Jews in Germany were nicer and more patriotic than Arabs are in Israel. which may or may not be the case, but he didn't answer at all what differentiates him from Hitler. He answered what differentiates Jews in Germany from Arabs in Israel. And it was very interesting that it wasn't pursued because it was a nice evasion of the question. And I, as a rule, loathe when the left call people fascists. I tend to find myself on the conservative side of the spectrum, theologically and politically. But when you do have a bona fide fascist, and I don't mean that as a dirty word. I mean, by any normative definition of fascism, this is a Jewish fascist. It's a tragedy. It is a tragedy that he cites that he is rooted in Judaism when there isn't anything normatively in Judaism, Orthodox, conservative, or Reform that supports him. He is condemned by the major Orthodox rabbis of Israel. His appeal is to those who suffered under Arabs, namely Arab Sephardi Jews.
Dennis, how do you account for the quite accurate, apparently, description of what his movement, the Koch movement, is doing in Israel?
Well, I read that article in the New York Times, too, and it basically showed greater support among kids. Kids are notorious for being radical when they're kids. They're either far right-wing or far left-wing. The desire for a simple solution to terrible problems is one that is identified with the juvenile mind. That he appeals to that mind is certainly understandable, undoubtedly sad, and one could cry over the fact that there is some popularity to someone who has such views when the Torah that he blasphemes constantly instructs the Jew to love the stranger as the stranger, because Jews themselves were strangers in Egypt and know how it feels to be one.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you can have at each other. And Rabbi Kahana, you can have the first word. So stand by, we'll be right back. You heard Dennis Prager, and he wasn't very kind.
No, I think that people who can't debate will usually defame. I think that there are two terrible things in this world. One is ignorance, and the other is arrogance. And the arrogance of ignorance is the most incredible of all things. If Mr. Prager were a rabbi and a scholar, which he isn't, he wouldn't have made that absurd comment about what the Torah stands for and what it believes in terms of Judaism. Let me teach you a lesson in Torah. In the last week's portion of the week, it spoke about a Jewish king. And it said, and I'm quoting the Hebrew for just the moment because it's important. Som tasim alecha melech, which in English is translated usually as thou shalt surely place for thyself a king from thy brethren and not a stranger. Meaning a non-Jew cannot be a king in Israel. The Talmud in Yevamot, you can take these notes because it's probably the first time you've ever seen it, states, why does it use the word som tasim, which in Hebrew is a redundant phrase, thou shalt surely? It says, any appointment of authority in Israel shall only be Jewish. That's not democracy. It's brought down as Jewish law in the Rambam, in Maimonides, who is often quoted as a progressive Jewish thinker, in which he states clearly that no non-Jew shall ever be appointed over a Jew, even as a clerk concerning the water carriers.
Rabbi, can't...
Now, that is listed... Excuse me, I'm going to finish.
All right.
That's listed in the Laws of Kings, Chapter 1. You can take that down, too. Judaism is not democracy, and only an ignoramus who hasn't learned it will make that statement that it is. Judaism states quite clearly that the Jews, when they create a Jewish state, will not grant citizenship to a non-Jew, but at most he shall be a gil toshav, a resident stranger. And when Mr. Prager quotes the verse about being kind to the stranger, he may not know, and probably doesn't know, since he isn't a scholar, that any time it uses the word strange, which in Hebrew is ger, The rabbis say clearly that that refers to a ger, to a convert, to a non-Jew who has become a Jew, who has converted to Judaism. Now, that's what the Talmud says when it states 48 times, says the Torah states that thou shalt love the stranger, and it refers to a Gentile who has converted to Judaism.
All right, Dennis?
Yeah.
All right. First of all, with regard to defamation, it's the arrogance and ignorance charge was obviously projection, since the only adjective I used in my first comment was fascist.
The only.
But you have not denied it, and as you know, even us non-scholars know the famous Talmudic statement, Shtikaka Hoda'ah, that silence is agreement. And I didn't interrupt you, and I would appreciate the same. After being called arrogant, ignorant, and defaming, and my comment is absurd, it is very hard for the rabbi to claim that he knows how to debate. But quite aside from all of that, I will leave it to the logic, rather than the distorted scholarship of Rabbi Kahana, who I repeat has been negated by the following, who are the leading Orthodox rabbis in Israel: Rabbi Aharon Lichtenstein, Rav Shach, and even Menachem Begin has condemned the tactics of the so-called rabbi. So while I do not claim to be a scholar, though I must say...
Wait a minute, I have to stop you right there, Dennis.
Yeah.
The so-called, you suggesting he's not a rabbi?
No, he is a rabbi,
but
rabbi means something other than having received ordination in Judaism. It is a teacher of Torah. At a given point, just as there are false prophets in the Jewish tradition, there are false rabbis in the Jewish tradition, this is a false rabbi. That he was ordained by another rabbi, I have no reason to deny. Be that as it may, just for the listener's interest, I don't know what constitutes a scholar. My book on Judaism is the most widely used text introducing Judaism in the English-speaking language. And my book on the history of anti-Semitism is equally highly regarded. I would love to know what the rabbi has written in the area of scholarship outside of perhaps his hate-mongering books he considers to be scholarly. That's debatable. Be that as it may, I leave it to the logic of your listening audience, since I don't think that they have delved into Maimonides. It says in the Bible, love the stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. And unless you translate the word stranger as convert, the Jews did not convert to Egyptian religion, and it is a distorted commentary.
All right. I hope now that we can stay away from all scripture and stay with what we're really going to discuss, whether the Arabs should be forced out of Israel and the occupied territories. My guests, Rabbi Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager. I'm Ray Brain. This is Talk. All right, my guests, Rabbi Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager. Dennis, I think it's your turn. I want to ask you something. Rabbi Meir Kahana has just said here recently that the rationale for wanting to push all of the 730,000 Arabs out of Israel and the occupied territories is that, if I recall, he said they hate Israel and Israelis. They think it still is Palestine, and they resent it. They can never coexist because of that. And because of their birth rate, one of these days, they're going to become a majority. Now, how do you answer that?
It's a lie. It's a sheer lie, and it's the lie upon which Rabbi Kahana predicates his case, and it should be exposed as such. So let me cite just a handful of statistics, since I don't want to belabor the point, though I'll happily discuss it all evening if you'd like. The Arab population of Israel is 11.1%, was 11.1% in 1960. As of the last census, in the last year, it's 17%. It is, in fact, however, not rising, evidenced by something that he often points out about the child birth rate of Arabs. In 1965, the average Israeli Arab had 8.4 children. It's now, in 1981, it went down to 5. The Jews are at 2.7 and rising. They are, in fact, going to meet, as industrialization continues, Arabs leave their farms and so on. Basically, the rabbi bases his ideas on what I have to call a lie, that Israel will cease to be a Jewish state given simple demographics. I don't like using that word, but it is one. The statistics show it is one. When Jews understand this, I think that he will lose a great deal of his support, except for those, like himself, who basically base their attitude on a love of hatred. If only they can hate us, and if not, I'll give them reason to hate us. As I said earlier, and I am convinced of this, it is part of the Holocaust mentality. It is a tragedy. It is an ongoing problem that some Jews, very few but enough, like Rabbi Kahana, thrive on being hated. And if the Arabs would, in his view, God forbid, be what he calls good Arabs, this would put him in a terrible, terrible bind, because he basically is a mirror image of Arafat. But I do have one final thing to say here. All this being said, and all my attacks on Rabbi Kahana notwithstanding, it is very important that non-Jews and Jews understand a moral difference between the Jewish world and the Arab world. Rabbi Kahana is by and large considered submoral in the Jewish world. He is considered an immoral aberration. His mirror image, however, in the Arab world, Yasser Arafat, is a hero.
The fact of the matter is that that wasn't the question that I asked Dennis Berger. The question was, assuming that the Arabs would become a majority, what would Dennis Prager say? Do they have the right? And don't say it can't happen. We can argue figures from now until tomorrow. I can tell you that the Galilee today is the majority of Arabs, and that's a fact. I can tell you that Wadi Ara, the area which is in the heartland of Israel today, is the majority of Arabs. I can tell you that the Sephardic birth rate has fallen far, far more drastically than that of the Arabs. I can tell you that the only reason why the Arabs are only 17% is because there was such a mass emigration of Jews from Arab countries in the early years of the state. I can tell you that more Jews are now leaving Israel than entering it. So therefore, why don't you answer the simple question, assuming, give me a hypothetical answer to a hypothetical question. Would you say that if the Arabs did become the majority, that they had an absolute right to do so in your democracy?
Yeah, again, you're asking a question that, what if my father became a rapist?
I knew you would never answer the question.
No, that's the phone. You're asking a hypothetical, and I'm dealing with facts.
Give me a hypothetical answer, okay?
I don't believe in that. You know the old Yiddish proverb, if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a trolley car.
I know the old Yiddish proverb.
If my grandmother had wheels, yes, she'd be a trolley car.
Every listener out there knows that he is a
fraud. Right, very good. But every listener now knows that you've been exposed as a fraud. Because you base your appeal on a lie.
Okay.
I don't care if the Galilee is more Arab, if the statistic is that only 17% of the state is like this, and Arab birth rate is dropping, and the Arab population on the West Bank is actually either in decline or total status quo because of Arab emigration. That is not a lie. It's from Benjamin Netanyahu, in the Israeli ambassador to the UN, presumably a liar like all those who oppose you.
No. What is true is that the Arabs who left the West Bank left to work in Kuwait and in Arabia, and have no intention of not coming home. And indeed, this last year, there was a major series of articles in Haaretz which showed that they are coming back because of a lack of jobs in the Gulf States. However, I ask you again, so that the listeners will attempt to get hold of this point. In theory, does your democracy allow for anyone to be the majority of the country, Jew or non-Jew? Yes or no?
In theory, in pure theoretical terms, the Jewish state has a right to remain a Jewish state. Just as during a world war, War II, England suspended certain democratic processes in order... Oh, my God. Oh, this is perversion.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll go to the phones. Rabbi Meir Kahana is with us, founder of the Jewish Defense League. He just turned that over to Irv Rubin. And he is, of course, a member of the Israeli Parliament. And Dennis Prager, who is a writer of books, Why the Jews. Hello, Abel. You're on with Rabbi Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager.
Okay, good morning, gentlemen. I have two questions for Mr. Prager and one for Mr. Kahana. Mr. Kahana, what... Let's just hypothesize that you come into power, and you and you can implement your policies. How long will it take, with you implementing your policies, how long will it take for the Arabs to mobilize and go to war against you, should that ever happen?
I don't know. I don't know how long it took them to, you know, go to war against Israel in 1948 without Meir Kahane. How long it took them to go to war against Israel in 1956 without Kahane. In 1967 without Kahane. In 1973 without Kahane. The Arabs will, you know, go to war against Israel on the day that they're convinced that they can wipe out Israel with Kahane or without Kahane.
And that I agree with you. I truly agree that they would do that.
That's right. Okay, and that's it.
Yeah, and Mr. Prager.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how you believe in terms of the Arabs, but do you believe that the Arabs will take the first, if they have a chance to destroy Israel, will they do that?
Most Arabs would.
Then you from that standpoint alone, you must admit that Mr. Kahane has a reason for doing that, because the Arabs will unite and destroy Israel the first chance they get if they really believe they can succeed.
Yeah, but you see, one of the reasons that it is important to have a Jewish state, it would seem to me, is in order to preserve Judaism. But where the essence of Judaism is to become like their Arab neighbors in their moral outlook, then the only difference between a Kahanaized Israel and an Arafatized Jordan is the language that they speak. So the raison d'etre, the reason for being of Israel, if it's to become a state as morally low as many of its neighbors, strikes me as a bit odd. So I don't understand what one has to do with the other. That Israel can continue to be allied into the nations as a democratic state in the midst of tyranny is not in any way necessary to have compromised just because you have many of its enemies, and not all. I don't think that Egypt would, in fact, join in that battle at this time. And everybody to the left of Rabbi Kahane, including the right-wingers in Likud, generally agree with that. That's why they signed a peace agreement with Egypt.
I think that's probably the most absurd statement that I have heard this season. Mr. Begin signed it, and the Likud went along with it. I sit in the Knesset, and the attacks upon Egypt that I hear from the Likud are just legion. Because I'm just, you know, just asking now, because I'm not really sure what Mr. Prager means by Judaism. And it's just, you know, kind of a, you know, personal question. When you say Judaism, is your concept of Judaism, of Torah, do you believe that God literally appeared at Mount Sinai and gave the Torah to the Jewish people? I'm just curious.
There is no Jewish source in any normative Jewish source that believes that God literally appeared. Your anthropomorphic understanding of God is pagan.
Is the Torah, the five books of Moses, the literal word of God? Yes or no? Don't try to evade questions.
I believe that the Torah reflects God's will.
I hope that every single listener out there is getting some kind of an idea of what Dennis Prager is. He won't answer questions. So clearly, therefore,
why is that not an answer to a question? I believe that it reflects God's will.
Do I believe that God dictated each word exactly as such to
Moses? On that particular issue, I do not know. It is possible yes, possible not, and it is utterly irrelevant to your distortion of it.
Wait.
Which is why no reputable rabbi.
You're the one who should be defensive. But I'm not defensive.
You have been called a fraud Jewishly, and people should know that.
But that doesn't bother me. Whether it bothers you or not, I answered you.
Sam is bothered. He's holding on the line here from Reno.
Now, therefore, if you're not sure that God did give the Torah, he didn't give the Torah.
No, I didn't say that. I said that I wasn't sure that God dictated every single word as the human beings wrote it down. That is
Nietzsche. Before you sit down and say, okay, we've got to figure this out, let's reach a compromise.
Well, let me answer first. This is Dennis Prager. Actually, I do think that there is a possibility of a nonviolent solution to the problems between Israel and its Muslim and Arab enemies. First of all, Israel has to be extremely strong militarily, because if it's not, it invites destructive forces to destroy it. This no one can deny, and it is on the basis of Arab hatred that that Rabbi Kahana owes his limited but nevertheless real popularity among those particularly who've lived under Arab rule, namely Jews from those countries. But insofar as he's concerned, in the Baltimore Jewish Times, he answered your question by saying, we'll put them on trucks and send them over the Allenby Bridge, that's to Jordan. And if they resist, he was asked, and now I directly quote him from this week's issue of the Baltimore Jewish Times, we'll use force. And if they fire at our soldiers, we'll kill them.
No, Dennis, wait a second, and this goes to you before the rabbi jumps in. That's exactly what I'm talking about. How do we get your two sides to talk?
Wait, what do you mean two sides? Wait. What do you mean our two sides? We're both Jews, we both believe in Israel's right to exist.
Point. You have to reach a compromise. The Jews have to reach a compromise point first. Europe has to reach a compromise point within their factions, and then all sides have to sit at the table.
Yeah.
How do we reach compromise, obviously, just like...
Well, the answer is, wait, hold it. First of all, you have to understand, I think general belief, the greatest war right now in the world is not in the Middle East. The Middle East may have the most rhetoric coming out of it, but the greatest war right now is the Soviet genocide in Afghanistan, which is not a religious war. It's conducted by atheists. So just on behalf of religion, which I deeply believe in and revere, I don't think you should make that statement that religion is going to cause the greatest war.
See, I think that as of this moment, and indeed I think as of all moments, there is no answer to the Arab Israel problem. The fact of the matter is that we have got to grasp the basic fact that the Arabs look upon Israel as a robber state, as a secular state, as a foreign body in a Muslim area. Most Arabs, the envoy, the ambassador here, once said, this is the Middle East, not the Middle West. And as Mr. Prager finally said, something true, not every problem has an answer. And this is one that hasn't got an answer. Because, you see, Egypt is nearly the other side of the coin of Syria. There are basically two kinds of Arab states, clever ones and stupid ones. The stupid ones, like Syria and Libya, say exactly what they mean. Get rid of Israel. Toss the Jews into the sea. And the clever ones mean it, but don't say it. And Egypt has gotten back a Sinai without firing one shot, one bullet. When they learn to use the U.S. weapons, and when they feel that they are ready, and when they finish their tunnels underneath the canal, you'll see a war in which Egypt takes part against Israel. So, I live in Israel, and I don't live in Atlanta, and I don't live in Los Angeles. So I want peace more than either of you two. I serve in the army, and my son is in the army. I want peace a lot more than Mr. Prager does. But it's not going to be peace. And I say that sadly. There will be peace when the Jews do that which God wants and go back to his law. Concerning your point, I think you're dead right. There is a God in this world, and we're living in the era of the final era, and the final war will be a religious one. And the fact that the Soviets are atheists in no way means that it won't be a religious war, a war between people who believe and people who don't. You're absolutely right, and that war will be fought in the Middle East.
Hi, John, I appreciate your call. Thank you. My guest, Rabbi Mayer Kahana, who is a member of the Ark, and say hello to Al. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Ray.
The guy that sounds like Jeff Chandler.
I told you, that makes my day.
Rabbi Mayer Kahana and Dennis Prager, you're on.
Dennis Prager, good morning, gentlemen. Now, I have a question for Rabbi Kahana, and we've spoken before in person, and we've spoken on the air, and my question is this. If the Arabs living in Israel swear their allegiance to Israel and honor its flag and what it stands for, then I believe they deserve to live there. But unfortunately, the reverse is true, and no nation is obligated to tolerate a people that seeks its demise. So, in other words, their goal, I feel, is to pursue, well, we know, to pursue the mythology of a Palestinian state in Israel, especially considering that Jordan is a Palestinian state which occupies 80% of what was considered the, what was considered the Jewish national homeland. So in that sense, I'm asking a question. It's a hypothetical one. But if the Arabs living in Israel swear their allegiance to Israel and honor its flag, we do know that Arabs living in Israel enjoy a better standard of living than any Arab state can offer them. And if they realize that and they're truly citizens, would you still feel the way you do, Rabbi Kahane?
Of course, Al. The problem is that they're citizens. If tomorrow morning the Arabs all became...
hypothetical about it.
Wait a second. I mean, I don't duck questions like others do. Just listen to me. I'm going to answer the question. Of course that doesn't change anything. Because if all the Arabs tomorrow became saints, and I was now living in a state with 730,000 Arab saints, who in 20 years will be 2.5 million or 3 million Arab saints, and in 30 years will be the majority of the country, but saintly. I don't want to live as a minority under any saints.
No,
we can't.
Missing my point.
No, believe me, I'm not missing anything. They can swear allegiance to Israel, but if they have 61 Arabs in that Knesset, do you believe that they will continue living in a state which is called the Jewish state?
Well, I have to say something. There are two very important points here. First of all,
Rabbi
Kahane.
I haven't finished, but Dennis,
you did. You gave him an excellent answer,
I will decide when I have finished, and then you can, of course, pick up. And you decide.
I understand. It's a very good rhetorical device.
But
you made a very clear point.
Dennis Prager, I haven't finished my point at all.
Well, let's hear your additional point.
Fine. No, I'm speaking to him and not to you. And you can listen to him if you want to. Now,
is this how you got elected? What's
you have no?
It's remarkable the way you speak.
Dennis Prager, please.
It really is remarkable.
Dennis, you aren't one of my voters because you're not a citizen of Israel. So you can't vote for anybody. Now, the fact of the matter here is that one of our problems is that you stated the living standards of the Arabs in Israel are higher than that of any other of any Arab state in the world. Of course this is true. But why must people think that you can buy other people?
No.
One second, you can't. You can't buy the Arabs' national pride by giving them an indoor toilet. You can't buy him by saying, look, we will let you go to a university. The most dangerous Arabs in Israel are precisely those who are in universities.
Please.
And as their living standards rise, they become much more dangerous.
Rabbi.
You can buy a condominium, and you can buy a Cadillac, you can't buy an Arab. Not by bread alone does an Arab live.
You know, many Druze fell in the line of battle fighting with Israel.
Right.
You know that.
I certainly do.
And I know many, many names. One time listening to shortwave, listening to Kol Yisrael,
yes.
I thought I was on an Arabic station because the 18 names that had been mentioned, six were Jews and 12 were Druze, and I'm trying to remember. I don't remember now. I don't have the statistics in front of me. But this is the point I'm trying to make. If they're willing to give their lives, their allegiance, you see, this is the point.
It's irrelevant to Rabbi Kahane if they're willing to do that. It's irrelevant because morality is an irrelevance. As he often says, morality is a Western invention unrelated to his understanding
never said
of
that
Judaism.
In my life.
You said it constantly.
Never.
Constantly. You
never.
Said morality is a Hellenistic idea.
Never said it
yes,
once.
Yes, you did.
You show me where I said it.
I certainly will.
You give me the place and...
Okay,
and,
that is a deal. Absolutely.
And I'll
that is a deal. Okay, you got a deal. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. But wait a second. I want every listener to listen to
that's correct.
Words.
Fine. And you will be doing your swimming. But the point is,
when can I expect you to tell me this?
Within a week.
Al.
Al. Well, the giveaway part of the giveaway on Rabbi Kahane's moral understanding is he said, even if all the Arabs were saints, that's very important. In other words, the issue is not morality. It is truly race. It is Arab blood that is detested, not Arab morality. In other words, no matter how decent they might be, he wants to kick them out. That, to me, is the essence of the entire issue here. Morality is foreign to his understanding. It is a blood-based understanding. The second issue is that he says that if they will have one day 61 members of parliament, in other words, a majority, In other words, everything keeps coming back to this hypothetical, despite the fact that Arab birth rate is down, despite the fact that they are nowhere near a majority of Israel's population. They are not moving in that direction. That is why I keep coming back to this issue as the untruthful essence of the appeal. No one denies, who is Jewishly identifying, the need for a Jewish state to be Jewish. But on that grounds, to throw out people on the basis of their blood, I don't see the moral connection.
All right, we have to take a break. You would like to answer Dennis Prager.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Prager's last comment about our blood and so on. Dennis, that's really not, that's not nice. You know,
blood libel?
Oh, of course. It is. It's a blood libel. You know very, very well that if any Arab came to me and said, I would like to become Jewish, and he converted according to the proper standards, of course, just as any other non-Jew, that he would be welcome, blood and all. So I think that you should try and be a little honest. It's not easy, but try and be honest. My problem with the Arabs has nothing to do with their blood. It's that they want Jewish blood.
No, but you said even if they were saints, Rabbi, you said even if they were all saints, you'd throw them out, meaning you would go to their homes and you would ship them away. Is that true or false?
You must learn.
No, you must learn honesty.
No,
answer me. You like yes or no questions.
You will learn patience when I finish speaking.
No, no, no.
You can answer, ask the question, and then you'll get the answer.
Very good.
I now speak. That's a good boy. Now, the fact of the matter is,
obnoxious. God won't
help on this thing.
You should have him on many hours, because I really believe that the support for the rabbi in the country, the more he speaks, diminishes. That's a service, Ray, that you're doing the country.
Okay. Now, so obviously it's not blood. It's a question of Arabs whom I respect, because they believe that the country's there.
You respect them so much you want to chase them all out.
Exactly. And if I didn't, I would be like Dennis Prager, who would say, but they're basically good, and we can find ways of living with them. But since I know that the Arabs who are in the camps outside of Israel want to go back to Haifa and to the Galilee and to Jaffa and to Ramleh and to Lida and to all these Israeli cities from which they originally came, and because I know that the Arabs sincerely believes that it is Palestine and not Israel, therefore I respect them for it, and I don't believe that we'll raise his living standard and he'll be a good Arab. It doesn't matter whether he's a good Arab or bad Arab. He believes that the Jews are thieves, and he knows that Dennis Prager, if things get too hot for him in this country, can come to Israel, ask to become a citizen, and automatically get it, even though he's lived his 30-odd years or 40-odd years in this country, whereas his cousin, the Arab, cannot.
Rabbi, I have a question. How do you resolve the solemn promise that was made in 1948 to the Arabs if they would stay?
What solemn promise?
There were no promises made.
There were promises made by people. There were promises made by people, and there were other people who thought that that was the greatest tragedy ever. My God, if in 1948 the 110,000 Arabs who were there at that time would have left, it would have saved us the four Jews who were murdered this last month. I was at their homes, and Dennis Prager wasn't. I was at the hospital bed of a young Jewish child who lost his leg in an Arab bomb, because Arabs are in Israel. Prager wasn't. This is a tragedy.
All right, the Yankees will take...
Hello. Rabbi, I'd like to talk for a few minutes, and I assume that you will listen nicely.
Certainly.
As I will listen to you.
Absolutely.
I think that you are doing a service to America by talking, because as Hitler talked, and we finally found the death camps, and we looked back and we saw that he had foretold that he would do these things, that in the years when we find the death camps for the Bedouins, that the Israelis are now running, that no one will be able to hide their head and say we didn't know, because Kahana has told us of the death camps, and that how he will handle the Arab problem. And there will finally be, as Hitler found, he'll have to run a final solution. So this is very, very good. The American people should also realize that while we had several hundred hostages for 444 days in Iran, that Israel was selling them F-4 parts, that Israel is working with the South Africans in munitions and testing A-bombs, that this is something that needs to be realized so that in the future that we can come back and play the tape of this show and no one will ever be able to say, we didn't know this would happen. It is obvious, and I'm sure that you speak for people like Begin and the Argun and the rest. I'm appalled. I remember your slogan, "Every Jew at 22." Do you remember that from Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
I would have said "Every Jew and M1," but it didn't rhyme.
Well, you said it. You said it eloquently. I don't have any quarrel with the way you attained Israel. You got it in a time-honored fashion.
Personally, yes.
You stole it fair and square, just like we got the Indians. But please realize, don't expect the Arabs to be thankful to you for stealing it, and don't be too appalled when they attempt to get back what they consider their own land. Now, like I say, you got it fair and square, you stole it fair and square, but don't give me morality. If you can hang on to it by dealing with Khomeini and the South African regime, then that's how it works. You know, but you are doing a service. You are talking up and telling us your point, not only your point of view, but the basic Israeli point of view. And I believe you. I take you very seriously. I don't think you're a joke. You know, I don't think that you're just a isolated kook. I think you talk for the majority of the Israeli people. And I hope the American people are listening to your words.
Well, he doesn't speak for the majority of the Israeli people.
Well, I don't know if anybody knows for whom I speak or don't speak, Mr. Green.
Well, you don't speak for the majority of the Israeli people.
I don't know if you've ever spoken to the
majority of the Israeli people. Are you telling me you're speaking for the majority of the Israeli people?
I can tell you that I say what most Israelis think.
Told me a minute ago that he speaks for the majority. Well, I asked the question, does he speak for the majority of the Israeli people? And he answered, he speaks for the majority of what is the Israeli people think. How would you answer that?
Well, I mean, there are, to the extent that one can decipher the answer to that, I think it's very clear. I mean, Rabbi Kahana received a little more than 1% of the Israeli vote. Unfortunately, the Israeli parliamentary system, the representative system, works by percentage, not by local regions as we do. Can you imagine the United States, if all you needed was 1% to get into one of the houses of representatives, the types of people who we would elect, Ku Klux Klan and others? Could then a Ku Klux Klan member who would be elected with 1% of the vote go to a foreign country and say he represents anything more than that in his country? Obviously, he could say it. And he can't be utterly disproven any more than you can disprove the existence of
unicorns. All right, let's go to St. Louis and Patty. Hello, Patty. You're on with Rabbi Meir Kahana and Dennis Prager.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I live in Jerusalem. I happened to come in last night and catch your program, which was kind of interesting. I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I have a statement and a comment. First of all, I'd like to say that my Jewish sensitivities as an Orthodox Jew, right, it hits me very funny and wrong to kick all the Arabs out of Israel. That's what all these years people did to Jews in other countries, and there seems to be something wrong with it. However, in my opinion of what the Israeli populace feels about Meir Kahana right now is that it is growing. Why? Because Jewish blood has gotten very cheap. When you live in Israel, and every other day there's another terrorist attack, these senseless attacks on Jews, they are so cocky, they just thrive on Jewish blood running in the streets, that people like myself, who are committed to Judaism, who are idealistic, and who normally wouldn't want to kick all the Arabs out of Israel, the support is growing for Meir Kahana because there's no solution. When you've got an enemy within your borders who is acting as an enemy and killing you right and left, the people who are not normally supporters of Kahana are becoming supporters of Kahana. And there is like a feeling underneath that, you know what, it's getting ridiculous. I don't agree with Kahana, and it makes me upset that I'm starting to agree with him. But I'm not willing to sit and live in Israel and Jewish blood to just run in the streets without Nobody cares. It's okay. The Arabs just get away with it. There's no death penalty. When a terrorist kills a Jew, it's fine. They get released. So that there is this, there's this feeling growing in Israel that there's no solution to living with Arabs except to get rid of them because of the way that they're treating the Jews. That's the first.
Let me ask you a question. This is Dennis Prager. The rabbi was asked earlier, if the Arabs metamorphosized into Israel-loving, or at least certainly respectable, non-terrorizing citizens, would he still want them thrown out? And he said, of course he would. How do you feel about that?
You know what? Theoretically, theory does not interest me. I live in Israel, and for an American Jew to sit in America and say, theoretically, what would you think if all the Arabs would come around? I know better. I live there. It's not the case. You're not talking reality. I live there. I want to have children there. And if you tell me, theoretically, if the Arabs would turn around and be nice and love us, what would you do? And I'm telling you, come and live there. You know, you get a lot less liberal when you live in Israel.
You know, I can just, you know, say that this is one of those calls that is really sent from heaven. The tragedy is how someone can sit here living off the fat of L.A., a weekly radio program making a lot of money, going around lecturing North Carolina, South Carolina, West Carolina, East Carolina, and babbling about the Arabs and they're nice and they'll be good and they'll be happy. You live in Israel, and I do too. And we see every single day attacks upon Jews daily. Sometimes Jews are killed. Sometimes, with God's help, they're not killed. Every single day. And these intellectuals sit here, intellectualizing about, but it's not nice, it's not moral. The rabbis had a word to say about Dennis Prager. And their comment was, he was mercy upon the cruel, will someday be cruel unto the merciful. It's the Dennis Pragers who are the unwitting sounding partners in the murder of Jews in Israel.
Rabbi Kahane, if I can just ask you a question.
Wait, I'd like to respond to that. I didn't know the rabbis spoke about me, and I'm actually flattered by the inference. But I got to tell you that, first of all, you know better personally, Rabbi Kahane, than to say that I go babbling around the country, since you and I were involved in the Soviet Jewry struggle in New York many years ago, when you two were in the United States, and your self-righteousness about your heroism in Israel in the last 14 years, I find to be less than impressive. So much about the babbling and about how much people make on any given issue. And as far as Jewish blood is concerned, I dare say that, first of all, just to be statistically, I understand that it is easier to say this in Los Angeles. Nevertheless, truth is truth, even if it's said in Los Angeles. And the fact remains that the number of Israelis killed by terrorism in any given year is far, far less than the number killed in a couple of months on the cars on the highways of Israel. Before we speak of this, that's a statistic, Rabbi, and it doesn't mean that any one life that is taken is cheaper than any other. However, if you want to protect Jewish blood, I dare say, and this I appeal to you who are calling as well, Rabbi Kahane's solution sounds wonderful, but in practice will spill so much more blood and will cause the de-Judaization of Jews elsewhere in the world and in Israel, will cause a civil war. The man thrives on hate. Jew to Jew, Jew to Arab, the rabbis dissociate themselves from him precisely for that reason. And therefore, I know your heartfelt cry about this despicable, low morality of Israel's neighbors. But for us to sink to it gives Arafat the greatest victory he could seek.
My question, can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
My question is to Rabbi Kahane. Is this? I was not aware that Rabbi Shach disagrees or disapproves of your policies.
It's not true. It's just not true. He just lied again. It's just not true.
It is not true. Are you stating for the radio that Rabbi Shach supports you? Yes or no?
Of course. Of course, I am saying that he doesn't back me. But
does
on
he?
This,
oh,
on this
oh,
issue,
oh,
yes.
There you go.
On
fine.
This issue, he supports me.
On what issue does he support
on the
you?
The Arab question.
What does that mean? Be specific. Does he support Rabbi Kahane?
He certainly believes that.
Does
no,
he
yes,
like
yes,
it?
Yes,
he does?
Yes.
That's on the record.
Okay, right.
All right,
on the record.
Fine. I will have proof of that as well, right, that it's simply not true.
Okay.
Patty, I want to thank you for my Mayor Kahane and Dennis Prager.
Hello. It's really a pleasure to speak to both of the guests here. And basically what I'd like to say here is I've been a listener of Dennis for quite some time, and I agree with 99% of what he says and what he stands for. However, for the first time, I'm a little disappointed in what he's saying. I don't agree with most of it, and I'd like to ask him if he's thought a second time about this.
He's my motto against me, huh?
Uh-huh.
I've thought about a few hundred times about it. The essence of my entire life as a Jew and as a human being is that the Jewish people has a task to bring the world to ethical monotheism, to the belief that there is one God for everyone who demands one ethic for everybody, and that therefore the essence of Judaism is that you treat every human being with the identical ethic.
Well, yeah, that sounds real good, and it's really...
Well, it also says it in the Torah, there will be one law for you and for those who live among you.
It means...
I know, but the rabbi is going to tell it, right. Even though it says that the Jews were converts to Egyptian paganism, it's...
Well, the other thing I'd like to say is I've heard the rabbi quite a bit on the radio, TV lately, and it's really, it boggles my mind how he gives clear, concise answers to all the questions, yet every time, every time he comes on the air, he gets asked the same ridiculous questions every time. Are you a Hitler? Are you an Arafat? And
why are they ridiculous?
Why?
If he wants to do to Arabs what Arabs want to do to Jews, why is the question ridiculous?
Well, Dennis, you know better than that.
No, don't tell me. Wait, answer me. I'm willing to learn from you.
Okay.
He says he would like to do to them what they would like to do to Jews. So tell me why it is not a fair question.
Because, Dennis, you know, you should know if anybody does. If someone's going to kill you, you're going to take care that it's not going to happen if you can.
That's in the Talmud, right?
In other words, that allows you, therefore, to basically kill any Arab in Israel.
He's not saying that.
Yes, he is saying that.
No, he's not saying that.
I'll read it from the Baltimore Jewish Times, okay?
Read it.
Here you go. 8/23/85. Kahana. Believe me, when Kahana says that they must go, they'll flee. We'll put them on trucks and send them over the Allenby Bridge. Question. And if they resist, Kahana. We'll use force, and if they fire at our soldiers, we'll kill them.
If they fire at our soldiers, we'll kill them.
Exactly. In other words,
you're such a fraud.
Wait,
it's incredible.
The fraud, let's let our listeners decide who's the fraud.
They already have.
Since you said, I agree with you, since you said we'll use force, that presumes that you will kidnap Arab families from their homes. Now, if they then resist you, you'll shoot them. Now, if that is not a prescription to shoot Arabs, please tell me what it is. Come on, we're not your audience of supporters in Israel. Defend us logically.
Are you nothing?
Yes, sir.
Okay, fine. I want to throw the Arabs out because they, from the 1920s, have killed us.
You're not answering my question.
I will answer.
You're the one who likes direct
Dennis
answers.
Prager, you'll get a
you
direct answer.
You said you deny that you would kill them.
Dennis Prager, just shut up and just let me just finish, all right? Let me answer you. Otherwise, I can't answer someone that doesn't let me answer, okay?
All right, we have someone holding on in Jericho,
right,
New York.
Right,
so.
Jericho, don't worry. Those, you know, walls,
we're coming,
will,
Jericho.
Those walls will come tumbling down. Now, listen, the fact of the matter is that, of course, I want them thrown out. And I hope to throw them out peacefully. And if they resist, we will, of course, use force against them. And
we'll kill them, you said.
Dennis, you have a tremendous problem.
No. You have a tremendous problem.
I haven't finished.
You hate logic.
Let me just finish.
Please finish it.
That's right.
Because we do have it.
We are waiting for you to finish it.
Hold
every
then.
Time I interrupt, you're waiting to finish.
Every time
okay,
you
go ahead.
All right,
interrupt,
finish. I can't.
Right.
I can't
finish it already.
Right. Dennis, quiet. Now, calm down. Now, the fact is, therefore, that if they will use force and if they will fire at our soldiers, of course we will fire back. And the fact that, for example, that the Jews do to Arabs what Arabs do to Jews, such as using Jewish tanks against Arab tanks, doesn't make the Jews and the Arabs a
threat. All right, let's take a call from Edward in Jericho, New York. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning. Rabbi Kahane makes a logical argument, and instead of debating him, Mr. Prager and everybody else I've heard vilify him. There are logical answers. The most logical answer, it seems to me, is you're right. It's too bad it couldn't have been done in 1948. It obviously can't be done today because Mr. Prager and his, I don't want to say ilk, people who cover think like him around the world make it impossible. I want to say that if Mr. Prager sees no difference between deaths on the highway and the murder of Jews by Arabs in Israel for reasons of politics, religion, nation, whatever, then he obviously sees no difference between a highway death and the murder of Martin Luther King. There are a difference in the degrees, qualities, effects, and purposes of deaths.
So, since Rabbi, you went first, I'll have you go first this time, then the last word from Dennis Prager.
Is that how it works? Okay.
All right. Well, I think that's fair.
All right. You have
30 seconds.
Okay. I think that the listeners have, of course, listened. And, of course, I hope that they've also heard. The fact is that the state of Israel's fate lies in the balance. And, of course, the Arabs aren't a majority now. But the rabbis in the Talmud said, "Who is wise? He who sees the future. I see tomorrow now. And I want to end it before Israel turns into a bloody Northern Ireland."
Dennis?
The Jewish people have suffered terribly in the Holocaust and is suffering terribly at the hands of those who would like to repeat the Holocaust in the Middle East. It is no wonder that, given all that hatred, that we would breed the mirror image of those who wish to destroy us. In that sense, Rabbi Kahana is a Jewish tragedy, but happily and untragically, he has minimal support in Israel and he has minimal support among those who love Judaism.
Rabbi Meir Kahana, member of the Israeli parliament, and Dennis Prager, radio commentator, thank you both for being with us, and to both of you, shalom.
Shalom.